How does the use of NSAIDs, or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, increase survival rates for patients with cancer altered by this PIK3CA gene?
Yeah, thank you so much for the question. Well, the mechanism is really difficult to determine in people. So we went to our laboratories and we studied models. And what we think is happening is that activation of this gene, either by virtue of a mutation or, you know, many copies of the gene known as amplification, turns on cancer-promoting pathways, in this case, a pathway called PI3 kinase signaling. And it appears that when this pathway is turned on, there's increased production of inflammatory cytokines like prostaglandin E2. And prostaglandin E2 has been implicated for a very long time in both the immune system as well as in the behavior of tumor cells. So what we think is happening is that while having a mutation in an oncogene is a bad thing, and our study sadly showed that as well, that is patients whose tumors have this altered gene, if they don't take anything like NSAIDs or aspirin, their survival is actually worse at 5 years. It plummets from 45% to 25%. But in this case, it was a retrospective cohort, so if they happened to be taking NSAIDs, and most of them were taking baby aspirin, most likely for cardiovascular reasons, their survival improved from 25% to 78%. And we think this is because it is blocking the production of prostaglandin E2, having an impact on the immune system to boost anti-tumor immunity and to suppress the growth of the cancer cells so the cancer doesn't recur and the patients survive. That's what we think is happening.
Now, we imagine there's probably much more research that needs to be done, but do you foresee a change in the way doctors treat this type of cancer as a result of this information?
That's a really good question. You know, so I, as an investigator, I am really forced, and I believe that, you know, this kind of retrospective data, while amazingly compelling, needs to be corroborated by a prospective study. So we've designed and written and are seeking funding to do a trial where we randomize patients to either a placebo or baby aspirin, and we follow them for 2 years after they've had curative treatment for their head and neck cancer. And we are hopeful that these retrospective results will be confirmed in a prospective study. And there's recent, you know, results from large epidemiologic studies published, for example, in the New England Journal of Medicine showed that as safe as aspirin is, it has side effects, hemorrhage. And healthy people who don't have any other indication to take aspirin probably shouldn't take aspirin. So the literal answer is we should wait for the prospective findings to change medical practice. But then there's the real-world pragmatic view. Right now, I think we're at a critical juncture in cancer medicine in our country and in the world. What I mean by that is we've always known, and as a cancer doctor, it's been so obvious in my practice, that patients who have the same tumor under the microscope that have different tumors by biological behavior. And we've now unlocked, if you will, over the last 5 to 10 years, the genomic underpinnings of individual cancers. The key is, how do we justify getting that information on our patient's tumor, meaning how will it change the way we practice medicine? So if you look at least in my world of head and neck cancer, there is no agreement about how we use genetic information about the tumor to guide therapy. In fact, in our academic practice, and my suspicion is in almost all practices, there is no routine assessment of genetic alterations in the patient's tumor because, frankly, we don't know what to do with that information. So I think that if I were practicing and I wanted to think about doing something for my patients before the definitive prospective study results were available in a few years, I would test my patient's tumor to see if it had an alteration of the PIK3CA oncogene. And in that case, I would suggest that they take baby aspirin.